Hello and welcome to the Smart Witch podcast, and thank you so much for being here with me today. It is late May as I am recording this episode, and today I thought it would be fun if we actually just talk about some of the astrology that is relevant to this particular time that I'm releasing this episode, because we have a lot going on. May has been a jam-packed month, astrologically speaking. And a lot of these influences are going to continue into June, and some of them are even going to continue well into the fall. So I do want to just talk about some of the things that are going on astrologically right now, and I think that this will then prepare us to really effectively move forward in an empowered way, which is always the role that I like to play in your astrological kind of understanding of what's happening. So the first thing that I want to talk about is Mercury. So Mercury entered Gemini at the very beginning of May, on May 3rd, and Mercury in Gemini thus far has been really strong. So Mercury is at home in Gemini. Gemini is one of the two signs that Mercury rules. And so when Mercury is transiting through Gemini, as he's going to actually for quite some time, Mercury is going to remain in Gemini all the way until July 11th, which is a little bit unusual. Typically, Mercury will move from sign to sign within a matter of just 2 weeks. And so we're kind of enjoying the energy of Mercury in Gemini for a rather long time. But the reason Mercury is staying in Gemini for so long is because he actually turns retrograde in just a couple days at the time of my recording. But of course, we'll get more into that in just a second. So Mercury in Gemini is increased mercurial acumen. So we are more eloquent collectively when Mercury is in Gemini. We are better able to express ourselves verbally as well as in writing. We are more articulate. We are basically experiencing a speed up of all of our mental processes, which are just kind of functioning optimally. We are able to communicate really effectively. And really Mercury in Gemini, and especially now, by the way, that we are about to enter Gemini season this week, solar Gemini season, Mercury in Gemini really just brings movement and developments and contacts and connections and intel. So it's a really powerful kind of transit for just essentially bringing some movement and swift change into stagnant or boring situations. And it also is good for progress and kind of forward movement. So it's really just a little burst of energy. It lightens heaviness. It disperses stagnation. So this is a really powerful influence. And as I said, especially now that Mercury is about to enter, or I'm sorry, the Sun is about to enter Gemini. So we really just have a lot of Gemini energy kind of in the collective right now. So that's really important to acknowledge. Now, Mercury, as I said just a minute ago, does turn retrograde, though, in Gemini in just a couple of days. So I think the exact date is, what, May 29th. So Mercury turns retrograde in Gemini on May 29th, which is going to be kind of a little bit of a bitch retrograde. I'm not going to lie to you. And usually, you know, when we talk about Mercury retrograde, I really do think that it gets a really negative reputation. And obviously, to a point, like, we do have to live our lives. And I think it's really important to name that. I don't think astrologers talk about that enough. There's a lot of this very sort of fear-based dialogue that we hear around particular events, including eclipses, which we have one coming up as well next week, which we're going to talk about in a moment, and also retrogrades too. I hear a lot of fatalistic kind of fear-based interpretations that are really just meant to almost scare people and make them more dependent on that source of information. So that's not what we're doing here, but I do want to warn you that astrologically speaking, Mercury retrograde in his natal sign of Gemini is going to bring about some of the more kind of conventional, typical, traditional warnings and associations that we might think of within the context of Mercury retrograde. So because Gemini governs communication, this might get a little bit hairy now. So essentially, I don't ever want to predict that for anybody, but what I do want to just stress is that it's going to be really important over the course of the next couple weeks until Mercury turns direct, which I think this is actually a pretty long retrograde. I don't think he stations direct until the end of June. I believe it's roughly the 21st or 22nd. But essentially the whole month of June, certainly the better part of June, we're under this influence. And so I really do just want to encourage you to triple check everything. Not just that you are communicating effectively, but also when we think about literally the communication technologies, which Gemini and Mercury both rule. So we want to make sure that important text messages and emails have gone through. We want to make sure that we're backing up our important work. And certainly this Mercury retrograde is going to be a powerful invitation to reassess some of the ways in which we tend to communicate. And for me, that's already started happening. Just a couple days ago, you know, me and my boyfriend have a very peaceful relationship. It's really joyful. But the other day I got kind of annoyed with him about something small that really had nothing to do with him. It was actually just sort of a more of a visceral trigger. Something had happened that had reminded me of something else. And I sort of closed down on him. And, you know, I sort of realized, and of course I logically knew this anyway, but that I really don't want to bring that particular communication strategy, which is essentially none, right? When we're shutting down on somebody, rather than talking about the things that we want and need from them and the things that we're feeling, we're not really using any kind of strategy. We're just really using a strategy to keep ourselves safe. But this is a really powerful time, this month, June, that is, to just see the ways in which we communicate with others or fail to communicate with others that work for us and that don't, and ways that we have always kind of handled maybe conflict, stressful situations, or dialogue that's starting to get a little heated. Do we yell? Do we raise our voice? Does our voice literally, the volume, escalate? Do we, you know, talk really fast? Do we revert automatically to more of a masculine, you need to do this mindset, as opposed to presenting our ideas in a way that is feminine and even maybe flirtatious and feels like an invitation to the other person? Do we just sort of retreat altogether and shut down and become nonverbal? Do we physically leave the space or leave the area? Do we, you know, pretend everything's okay and literally lie about the way that we're feeling so that we don't have to talk about it? These are all different communication strategies. And, you know, not to say, I'm not, by the way, judging any of those, because certainly leaving the room or leaving the space physically can actually be very helpful and can prevent us from saying things we regret. And certainly, if you're in a situation that is becoming unsafe, whether physically unsafe or even just emotionally unsafe, you have every right to create a boundary and physically remove yourself from the space until the person you're talking to has calmed down. So I don't mean to say that all of those are inherently negative. And really, there's no shame in any of our learned communication strategies or lack thereof, because as I kind of, you know, have been talking about with my partner and just thinking about myself, we really do learn these strategies young in childhood, and they're often defense mechanisms that we obtain along the way because they were adaptive at the time. Maybe when our parents fought or became unreachable to us, we responded by being passive aggressive or just sort of withdrawing until it seemed safe. Or maybe we, you know, had more of a fight response. And so, you know, we're all just little people in big people clothing. The little girls, little boys, little people within us are still there. And whenever something happens that is, you know, upsetting to us, that is sticky or tense, maybe it's not even an outright conflict or argument, but maybe it just for some reason hits a little bit below the belt, we have a physical, bodily, visceral response which can cloud our normally skilled communication, you know, abilities. And that's something that I've been thinking about a lot, just how emotional triggers can affect the way that I communicate, because I consider myself to be a really effective communicator. I have a lot of air in my birth chart, and that's just somewhere that I believe I excel, although I've also done a lot of work on that and taken a lot of classes, and it's something that I'm really intentional about, communicating with people that I care about and that I want to know. You know, I want them to know what's going on with me, and I want to know what's going on with them. But Mercury retrograde does get a bad rap, but especially in Gemini, it is an invitation and a powerful one to reassess our communication techniques, styles, and strategies, and to notice where maybe, you know, communication strategies that were effective in one relationship that we no longer have. And I don't mean just romantic relationship at all. Maybe it was a different boss that you had, or a different coworker that you were spending time with and working with, or a different friend or a family member that you kind of learned to deal with in a particular way. Maybe some of those strategies that were adaptive in those relationships have become maladaptive now in your current relationships, or maybe, you know, they just don't have a place in other relationships than that particular one. So I feel like we're going going to be invited to do a lot of learning around the ways that we communicate, express ourselves, talk about our thoughts and ideas, and just represent our perspective, because that's really what Gemini is all about, and just connecting with others with the verbal and written word. So any ways that you can sort of set the intention to improve your communication techniques and strategies, I really think that you're going to see that this is going to be dramatically improved by the time Mercury stations direct toward the end of June. Now, again, though, we do want to be a little bit cautious just with the silly things, like double checking that, as I said, things are backed up, important messages have been sent and received. And then also, you know, Gemini does rule sort of short-term travel, more broad travel is Sagittarius's realm. But Gemini does govern our sort of everyday commute, for example, to work. And so we just want to be really careful. Obviously, it's never bad advice to just be careful and cautious on the road. But certainly this Mercury retro is going to govern travel to some extent. So we just want to be very careful, very cautious, have a backup plan. And, you know, again, certainly not trying to create a situation where I'm telling you something bad is going to happen to you, because you know that I do not subscribe to that bullshit. But this is definitely just a good time to be extra safe. Make sure that you have a spare tire in your car, AAA on speed dial, whatever it is that makes you feel secure and that helps you be, you know, empowered and understand that you do have a backup plan should anything unfold that's beyond your control. And that's another thing that I think Mercury retrograde really effectively teaches us and helps us with, is that, you know, it really does help us to create peace strategies for ourselves around things that really are not in our control, especially, if not exclusively, kind of the little things that do pop up, such as little, you know, flat tires and, you know, miscommunications with our partner and emails that we thought went through, but now they didn't. And, you know, our phone isn't working, whatever it may be, that's kind of frustrating. We really can always choose peace in those moments. And I know that that is so much harder said than done, especially for me. Like, I'm such an asshole when my computer stops working. I love to write. And so if I feel like that portal is blocked for me, I become kind of insufferable. So I totally understand that this is like not common sense, and it's easy to say, but then when we are invited to put that wisdom into practice, sometimes we sort of revert to frustration and spiraling. So Mercury retrograde, if nothing else, is very good at helping us to sort of work with that. Now, the other thing, the major aspect that Mercury is forming during his retrograde period is a square to Neptune. So Mercury actually squares Neptune twice, just because it's kind of awkward the way it's happening. So Mercury squares Neptune actually this weekend, I think on Saturday. And by the way, this weekend, I don't know the date off the top of my head, but at the time I'm recording, I think it's the 18th. So whatever this weekend would be, it's got to be something like the 22nd of May. Mercury will square Neptune, and then Mercury stations retrograde a little bit later in the month, and then as it's turning retrograde, we'll then make another square to Neptune. So it squares Neptune twice. So right now, actually at the time of my recording, this is a really active energy in the collective. And even though it's squaring Neptune right at the very beginning of the retrograde period, that really is going to kind of set the tone and continue to be a factor of this Mercury retrograde. So let's talk a little bit about Mercury square Neptune, which is actually kind of a lovely influence if wielded in an ethical manner. So Mercury square Neptune is actually fantastic, especially when it's a retrograde Mercury. It's fantastic for artistic and creative pursuits. And it's especially wonderful for lyrics, poetry, anything that has a strongly creative element, or that, you know, you really can't just sort of write on your own. You almost are channeling it from a higher source, any sort of writing like that. This is absolutely fantastic for that. And it is a really helpful influence for harmless charm. If we want to, you know, convince someone to agree with us, maybe in a professional context at work. If we want to flirt with someone in a way that is not gross and manipulative, but just sort of benefits everybody. So in that sense, you know, it's certainly not evil or negative. And I think you know that I'm vehemently against using that language with astrology, and certainly squares, because squares as more of a tense aspect do get a really bad reputation. And they certainly challenge us and stretch us, but they also feel kind of good, especially once we overcome the hiccup. So the hiccup with Mercury square Neptune, which is, by the way, very easily mitigated, is that this is an influence that everyone will have access to, and therefore not everyone is necessarily going to use it in the empowered and ethical high vibe way that you may, as, you know, a creative force and as something that can maybe even support you in being more charming, more personable, more charismatic. So this is just really a time to avoid people in your life, in your sphere, that you know are either trickster energy people, where they're not necessarily evil or terrible, but you know that they can't necessarily be trusted. They maybe like to stir the pot a little bit. They like to spread information. I'm sure that someone just came to mind for you, or maybe even a couple of people. And by the way, obviously, you know, I hope that you don't have a lot of these people in your sphere. I certainly don't. And I do what I can to pretty much hyper-vigilantly clear these people the fuck out. I have no chosen friends that do this. And I don't even have any family members that I'm close to that do this, because we do have choice over that as well. But what I'm thinking about are maybe people that literally, for whatever reason, you can't necessarily situationally escape. Maybe it's the parent of your child. Maybe it is a coworker that you don't have a say over whether or not they work at your job that you otherwise love. Maybe it is a neighbor or someone that's just in your community and it's a small town and you see them from time to time and they corner you at the grocery store. So, you know, when we think about these people that are sort of in our sphere, whether we like it or not, we don't have the choice over whether or not they get to be there in our physical space. They just are sometimes. Just be super duper careful with them over the course of this Mercury retrograde. Really just keep them the fuck out, honestly. Hopefully you do that anyway, but I'm sure that people came to mind for you that you know for a fact are likely to come out of the woodwork, because Mercury square Neptune can just sort of bring out con people and just these trickster kind of low vibe energies that we just don't want to be around. So I would say to exercise fantastic boundaries around these individuals, as you should be anyway, but let's certainly get more intentional about that throughout the month of June, because we don't have any time for that. And the other thing too is just being really careful about signing contracts. That's always kind of a typical warning that we associate with Mercury retro, but considering that Mercury is squaring Neptune while retrograde, this is even more the case for this particular one. And the reason for that is because Mercury square Neptune can cloud the full truth. Maybe we don't have all the information, and it can also just sort of make situations a little bit less easy to read. And, you know, again, other people are more charming, more charismatic than usual. And so while we may be thinking clearly, it could be easy for an offer or an invitation to be a little bit misrepresented to us. So that's really important to keep in mind. And this could not, by the way, be weirder timing, because I'm actually looking at apartments with my boyfriend right now. We are talking about moving in together, which is something, well, we're not talking about it. We are going to move in together within the year. So that's really exciting. And I'm super excited because I've lived in the same two-bedroom apartment literally since I was 18. I love this apartment, but it is small and it is an older building, which I like because it has a lot of character, but it's definitely got outdated appliances and, you know, it doesn't really have a nice bathtub that I can soak in. So I'm definitely ready for an upgrade of my living situation, and my man and I have agreed that we can afford something amazing together, and we're just really ready to take that step. He's here all the time anyway. So we are looking at houses and apartments for rent, and I am not sure honestly how I'm going to handle this, because I do feel that we need to live our lives. And that's something that I'm really passionate about, that astrology doesn't dictate or direct the course of our lives. I say this all the time. And so I don't know that I'm not going to sign a lease because we're actually looking at a house on Thursday night. It's, you know, we don't know what it looks like at all on the inside, but we love the location. We love the outside. It is 4 bedrooms, 2 bathrooms. And so we're looking at it on Thursday, which is before Mercury turns retrograde. That's not till next week, but, you know, it is in the shadow zone right now. So that's still not necessarily a great time to sign any contracts. So my point is, we do sort of have to trust ourselves to a certain extent. Either way, we have to trust ourselves that we can make informed decisions, but I do just think it's important to make a special note that with Mercury square Neptune while retrograde, this is not according to textbook astrology, the best time to sign a lease or a contract or to really firmly commit to something that you legally can't back out of, or it's just situationally really challenging to undo. So just be really careful about that. Make sure you're using your judgment. Some crystals that can help you, by the way, are any stones for discernment. So tiger's eye is really good. Bloodstone I love for decision making. Fluorite is the best stone you can work with for mental clarity. Put one of those babies on your third eye and you will see through any bullshit. Emerald is a really good one too for just anti-deception. And then I also really like black tourmaline for just all-purpose protection. And if black tourmaline is a little bit too heavy for you, if you're more of a water or air person and you don't like that really like heavy kind of grounding vibe, then smoky quartz is a really nice alternative. It's still grounding and protective, but just a little more gentle. So that's my take on Mercury retro. And then Mercury retrograde does conjunct the sun too on June 10th, which is a really nice aspect. And once again, I really want to stress that I think this Mercury retrograde is going to be really powerful. And I think we're going to emerge from it with, first of all, if you're a creative person, which I can't believe I just said that because I say all the time that we are all creative people. I have a whole episode about that. But regardless of, you know, whether you identify as a creative person, you have the potential to emerge from this Mercury retrograde with active work that is inspired from this time, because we do just have a lot of, between Neptune's influence and the sun's influence, it's a really good time to basically allow your creative juices to flow. And I've already felt that, by the way. I have been a writing fool lately. I just feel so creatively inspired, and I hope that you have felt that as well. So now let's talk about Venus in Gemini, which is a really fun influence. So Venus is in Gemini all the way until June 22nd. So once again, it's pretty much for the most part of June. And then she entered Gemini on May 8th. So we do just have a lot of Gemini energy in the cosmos, which is really kind of exciting. So Venus in Gemini is a really, really great time for casual dating and swiping. It's a really good time to jump on Tinder or whatever app of choice you use. It's a really good time to go for casual dates. And it really does depend, obviously, just with the pandemic, in what part of the world you live right now, and even in what state, because I know I'm in the United States and it's pretty different state to state. I'm in New York State, which we've kind of kicked ass. I think half, if not most, of the state is vaccinated fully, which is really exciting. Our numbers are really good here. So things are certainly looking up. I think as of literally tomorrow, at the time of my recording, masks are not really going to be a thing anymore that's required. I'm still personally going to wear mine, but they're not necessarily going to be mandated. So things are actually being lifted, which is kind of exciting, kind of, you know, weird, but we'll see. I'm optimistic. I think that's kind of the general vibe. But regardless, how this affects dating is going to be unique to where you are, basically. But regardless of what unique restrictions or lack thereof you are working with, Venus in Gemini is a fantastic time for dating and just for meeting new people. And what I really like about Venus in Gemini specifically is it teaches us to keep things light and to keep our expectations low and to really set an intention before a date, especially a first date or a blind date, to just have fun and meet someone new, rather than, you know, is this person my soulmate? Is this person going to be my one and only and my babe for life? And I say that as a Venus Pisces person. So for me, you know, I really can't do the superficial shit. I never do Tinder. I never really do. And I don't say that as in, you know, I'm limiting myself, because I did date casually for a little while. And I actually found it kind of fun after I had kind of applied this mindset that I'm about to tell you about. But Venus in Gemini really does teach us to essentially just not project on situations and just keep things fun, keep things light, and really allow your standards, not your standards to be low, because obviously we want to have high standards, but allow your expectations to be low. And even if you arrive at the date and you maybe immediately realize that either you're not attracted to this person physically or something about their vibe is, you know, not necessarily a match to you, and you probably know that maybe you even don't want to see this person again, I don't know, like, maybe they'll be a fantastic, you know, massage therapist or plumber or, you know, carpenter or friend, and you can end up kind of hitting it off mentally, if not necessarily physically or romantically. And so I know that sounds kind of silly, but genuinely, Venus in Gemini is all about keeping our options open and just kind of having fun exploring everything, exploring the people that we've had a crush on forever that we've never said anything, exploring suitors that we maybe never really considered, but we know that they would love to go on a date with us. Venus in Gemini is just a really good time to dabble, enjoy the versatility, and kind of serial date. And again, just keep it light and keep your expectations low and really just set the intention to meet someone new, maybe have a good conversation, and who knows, maybe this will literally become a connection, well, very non-romantic, that you can use later, because that's also very Gemini energy. Just, you know, Gemini loves the idea of contacts, connections, being in the know, having the intel, and Venus in Gemini can sort of help us to meet people, and not just romantically, by the way, but to keep our options open. We can work with it to meet people that we can then work with later, which is really powerful. And it's also fun, by the way, when we just date with the intention to not necessarily fall in love, not even necessarily have sex, not even necessarily go on another date every single time with everyone we meet, but to just have fun and meet someone new and maybe hear about their experiences. Maybe they're from another country. Maybe their upbringing was drastically different from yours. Maybe they have relationship stuff to teach you. Or as I said, maybe they have something to offer later that will be useful for you. So, and maybe you could even become friends. I've heard stories where people go on dates and they realize it's not a match, but they got along so well that they ended up remaining friends. So that's really kind of the lesson, I think, with Venus in Gemini. And that's a perspective that I really recommend just embracing now. And specifically too, by the way, I think it's really important to name that we don't learn, I mean, actually, we can learn relational skills and relational intelligence from taking the classes and listening to the podcasts and doing the research. But at the end of the day, field experience must factor in somewhere. And so this was kind of what propelled me into the world of casual dating, because I realized, especially during lockdown, and actually before lockdown, by several months, I was basically on a love and dating sabbatical. And I used that time to take Terry Cole's Real Love Revolution course, which was amazing. I took a couple of other courses specifically on relationship theory and attachment styles and all of that. And I really took that time to learn about how to relate more intentionally and how to sort of correct my energetic side of the street so that I could attract relationships and partnerships that were more in alignment with what I want. And sure enough, I ended up attracting the most amazing man who I've been in a relationship now with for almost 6 months, and it's going really well. And I've never felt this way about anyone, and I'm pretty sure he's my dude, which is pretty exciting. So it definitely paid off. But I did realize at a certain time that I was going to need to do the field research. And that really involves other people inherently. There's only so much learning that we can do on our own. And, you know, it's almost kind of like sex. If we never have sex and then we fall in love and we want to please our partner, obviously there's a lot to good sex other than just skills. Obviously it's connection and presence too, if not mostly. But certainly it's helpful if we've had some sexual experience before we make love with someone that we are really excited about and really want to pleasure and please and be present with. And so it's kind of the same idea with relational, you know, intelligence. Unless we practice these skills of being charming and asking good questions and being on a date and meeting someone new and accepting compliments and allowing them to pay the bill, all these little things that maybe we've struggled with in the past can microcosmically be handled gracefully in the context of one quick casual coffee date. And so literally use it. Use the date as kind of a spiritual classroom for yourself. And, you know, I think that that is important to realize that even people that we're not necessarily attracted to or that we can tell we don't necessarily want to see again have something to teach or show us. Obviously, unless the guy or lady or person is totally a creep, or obviously if you feel unsafe, don't even entertain them. But I'm saying under the typical circumstance that the person is, you know, likes you and it's fine, it's just not great necessarily, or maybe it's not a romantic match, still just see, you know, unless you have a really busy day, of course, but if you can spend 20 minutes having coffee with them anyway, see what they can teach you and what you can also practice with them about, you know, just relating. So I think that's really important to discuss. And Venus in Gemini is a really good time to put that idea into practice. Now, if you're not unpartnered. So if you're partnered, I guess that was kind of a funny way of saying that. Or even if you're maybe not partnered, but you are involved with people, you're in romantic relationships, this is a really good time to seduce via communication. So really good pillow talk, long phone conversations like you're back in middle school. Dirty talk in the context of the bedroom is really good during Venus and Gemini. And it's also just a really good time to make sure that you are connecting mentally with your partner or partners. Because a lot of times, you know, we do focus on the body. And certainly when Venus was in Taurus, the focus is on the experience of the body, the senses, our physical feelings. And that's really important. That's certainly a component. But Venus in Gemini says that the biggest sex organ that we have is our brain. And we want to be able to connect mentally with someone before we can feel connected to them emotionally, sexually, or spiritually. And so this is just a really good time to make sure that you're having dialogue with your partner or partners that is stimulating and that is exciting. And this is actually a really good time to talk about this because we're coming out of lockdown. And so depending on your situation, you may have been quarantined with your partner for the last year and a half. And if that's the case, I, first of all, praise you. But second of all, it's important to note that obviously, like, curiosity goes dormant when we're used to seeing someone constantly, maybe even more than we would like to be seeing them, and they're the only person that we're seeing. And not even just in a lockdown situation, a lot of the times I see couples or work with couples that have been together for so long that their natural curiosity that they have about each other, they forget it's there or they forget to cultivate it. Because like creativity, we are all curious peoples, right? Human beings are innately curious. We are curious about others. Maybe not intentionally or consciously, but we are curious beings who like to know what other people are up to, what's going on with them. And so what's funny about that is we sometimes do forget, though, to cultivate and continue to sustain a sense of curiosity about our partner. And that's really something that's going to be powerfully energizing to your relationship if you can cultivate that during this Venus and Gemini season, because that's more accessible to us. And so that's really my advice too for working with Venus and Gemini, especially if you're partnered or actively dating and seeing lovers. Just really approach them with a newfound level of curiosity. And that is, by the way, so charming. And that's something Gemini energy can really teach us in general, that we really do charm others when we are curious about them. Think about how good you feel when someone asks you a really good question that reflects that they've listened, or that just shows that they care and they are curious about you and find you interesting. Whether it's a stranger or your lover, it feels fucking amazing. And again, you know, you probably are curious about your partner. So it's not like you're reaching for something that's not there. It's just that we sometimes do forget to hone the skill set of actively asking the questions and, you know, how was your day? Not in sort of a blow-off-y kind of way that we're just asking out of obligation, but we genuinely want to know. And honestly, there's no excuse, because if you're someone who forgets details, you can literally make a note in your phone, which hopefully, you know, your memory isn't this bad, but you can literally make a note in your phone that, you know, maybe it's not your partner, but even an acquaintance or a friend, that last time you had coffee, she was going into a big meeting with her boss, or maybe her cat wasn't feeling well. So you can then follow up next time you see them and make sure that they know that you care and that you remember exactly what they've said. Maybe that sounds a little extra, but I really do think it's important that we approach our relationships with a sense of curiosity, because that is a big part of what makes us charismatic and magnetic, and it's what makes people like to be around us, and it ultimately is what cultivates connection between us and other people, which we so desperately need. And the other thing I want to say too is that if your partner is someone that you are not curious about and you really can't find anything about them that is genuinely of interest to you, then obviously that is kind of an issue in and of itself. There's a bigger problem there. So I hope that you can find something about your partners or lovers that is interesting to you and try to run with that. Ask them questions, make them feel as though they are interesting to you, and really just enjoy having dialogue with them. And maybe even if you are in a relationship of any kind, where maybe you are very physical a lot of the time, try to find other ways to connect. Not because being physical all the time is bad at all, but because there's lots of ways to connect that don't involve the body. And that's kind of what Gemini invites us into. Try to create the challenge to talk and not touch. And sometimes that can actually end up being very erotic. So that's something kind of fun that you can try too for Venus and Gemini. So moving along, I do want to talk a little bit about the new moon in Taurus, which we just had on May 11th, because even though that's long past, we are now in the Taurus lunation and will be until we have our solar eclipse in Gemini, which is happening in June. So the Taurus lunation is a really powerful time to create new routines and structures that will continue to serve you for a long period of time and that yield long-term beneficial outcomes. Taurus energy likes consistency and structure and security and a sense of safety. So this is a really powerful moon cycle to basically start any sort of a new regimen or routine that you want to last, that you want to continue doing. And, you know, obviously I hope that you reassess your personal routines more than just once a year, but the Taurus new moon and moon cycle should at least be the one time a year that you do kind of upgrade your, whether it's your skincare routine, because as we age, our skin has different needs. Whether it is that or your workout routine or the supplements that you take, you know, whatever it is, the way that you budget. So this is just a really good time to think about some of your personal daily routines. This can also be energetic routines too. Those were all pretty body slash lifestyle centered, but maybe you upgrade your meditation practice or you start a daily tapping routine in the morning or you get back into pulling a tarot card every day. Or maybe it's even just drinking more water. It can literally be anything, but the Taurus moon cycle is a powerful moment to essentially just get your ducks in a row and create little systems that make not only daily living easier for you, but that make it more fun, that create a sense of certainty and structure in your life, which in small doses feels very good. And it also does, as I said, yield these long-term beneficial outcomes that really improve our self-esteem. So that's something I wanted to say just about being in Taurus season, lunar Taurus season, that is. And then, so the other thing that's pretty major that happened in the month of May that I want to talk about is Jupiter entered Pisces. So Jupiter, oddly, is only actually going to be in Pisces for just a couple of months because Jupiter turns retrograde in a few months, where he will then retrograde right back into Aquarius, where he actually remains until the end of December 2020. 21. Yeah, we're in 2021. So Jupiter remains in Aquarius until basically the end of 2021 and does not re-enter Pisces until 2022. So Jupiter will be in Pisces though for the duration pretty much of 2022. So we're essentially getting a little bit of a prelude to that energy right now within the next couple of months. So Jupiter in Pisces is actually really exciting. Jupiter thrives in Pisces, and actually Jupiter was the ruler of Pisces before the discovery of Neptune. So Jupiter, we could say, is exalted in the sign of Pisces, meaning he functions especially optimally in this sign. So Jupiter in Pisces, I think, is really beautiful. I've heard a lot of different interpretations on this, but for me, I feel like Jupiter in Pisces is expansive. It teaches us and reminds us really that our life and our reality is our perception, and we have so much control over that shit. And we can really dream bigger. It's an optimistic energy. It's very expansive. I have heard a couple of warnings that Jupiter in Pisces can be a little bit slippery. It can just create situations of addiction or excess or overindulgence or lack of being in touch with reality. But I don't really think, I think that's kind of a perversion of the true energy, which is that there is truth to this idea that what we perceive is reality and vice versa. And I feel like Jupiter in Pisces is going to be really powerful in reminding us of that. And it's really the most optimistic and joyful big planetary, like outer planet transit we've seen in a while. So I feel like it's actually quite exciting, and I did want to touch on that a little bit. However, I do want to talk about the fact that, okay, so we have Gemini season starting in a couple of days. So we already kind of talked about that. Gemini season is fantastic for movement. It's fantastic for calling in new things and just getting energy kind of going that's been a little bit stagnant. Now, I also want to talk about Saturn retrograde. So those were kind of the two outer planetary transits that we had in May that are pretty significant. So Jupiter enters Pisces for just a couple months. And then we also have this Saturn retrograde through Aquarius, which is very exciting. That happens this Sunday all the way until October 11th. So Saturn retrograde is a fantastic time for restructuring. And anytime, by the way, we have an outer planetary retrograde, this doesn't really affect our day-to-day life as much as, for example, Mercury retrograde or Venus or Mars retrograde does. But it does impact our overall growth and development over the course of that time period. So Saturn, for example, is retrograde for 5 months once a year, so it's pretty cyclical. And during that 5 months every year, you know, we do feel that energy. It's just that it's a little more gradual and its impact on us is a little bit more big picture, rather than this influence being kind of a daily imminent presence in our lives. So Saturn retrograde through Aquarius, though, is really an opportunity for personal liberation. And it's exciting because we really do get this opportunity with Saturn retro to free ourselves from something. And certainly through the sign of Aquarius, which is all about freedom and liberation from the norms and letting go of restrictions and blazing a new path. So, I really do want you to play around with this idea over the course of the next 5 months, how you can sort of break free from the ways in which you maybe limit yourself, the ways in which you allow other people, whether it's family or your partner or your ex or something that some kid on the bus said to you in second grade. It's also just a good time to think about how you allow or don't allow or, you know, want to stop allowing some of the larger systems, structures, teachings, or laws that are at work in your life to limit you. And really, Saturn retro in Aquarius is just a fantastic time to aggressively self-individuate and cultivate your own unique originality. And I think that if we work with that intentionally and we really actively find ways to do that, we will find ourselves very liberated in some significant way that's private to us by October. So I did want to talk about that just briefly as well. Now, the last thing, and I almost want to say the most important thing that I want to talk about, is the lunar eclipse in Sagittarius, which happens on May 26th. So this is a total lunar eclipse in Sag, conjunct the South Node opposite the North Node, obviously, because the South Node and the North Node are inherently opposite each other. And this is also square Jupiter. So this is a very Sagittarian slash Jupiter eclipse. So the lunar eclipse in Sag is interesting because full moons in Sagittarius are always kind of truth-telling moments. Sagittarius is a sign that can be a little bit tactless at worst. At best, though, it's just very honest and direct. Sagittarians are usually straight shooters. They pretty much say what they mean. They're kind of like Aries people in that way. And so the full moon in Sag every year is always kind of a moment where we can expect to hear or get a sense of what people really think about us or where they really stand in relation to us. And this is, you know, really extends to people that maybe harbor secret resentments towards you that you weren't aware of, or people that you thought were on your team that maybe you find out are actually not on your team. Or it could also be people in your sphere that you had no idea how much regard they have for you. So it's not necessarily good or bad or, you know, upsetting or not. It's really just that this is a usually powerful time to get a sense of what and who people really are. And the truth can tend to come out during a Sagittarius full moon. Now, a Sagittarius lunar eclipse, this is really that much more amplified. And certainly with Jupiter's involvement, because anytime we have anything, any sort of a Jupiter aspect, especially a hard aspect like a square, Jupiter is an amplification energy. And so it can be quite lucky, but Jupiter square a lunar eclipse in Sag is really just going to amplify this ability of ours or this desire that we're going to have to sort of express ourselves in a way that's really, really free. And at best, this is a good thing. Obviously, I mean, we can really work with this eclipse and this Mercury retro to express ourselves, to, you know, welcome in creative opportunities and endeavors. And I actually think it's going to be really powerful specifically for creative genius. So that's something to sort of take advantage of if you are actively an artist or, you know, have a profession that is inherently creative. However, I also want to mention too that we do have Mercury square Neptune right now at play. So please think about that as well. It's important to note, just because I'm not saying that it's total truth serum, the things that are going to come out around the time of the eclipse on May 26th, because, and I do feel like they will be true. We will kind of have pretty big reveals and revelations, but with Mercury and Neptune, there's going to be some kind of a caveat or some kind of fine print, or it could create a situation where maybe we don't have all the information, we have a half-truth, but not the full truth. And so it's still recommended to essentially avoid during this particular week, and really throughout the rest of eclipse season, because this eclipse is really happening on the Sag-Gemini axis, it's recommended to avoid reacting too strongly or yourself sort of stream of consciousness revealing anything, just because it might feel true to you at the time, but the truth is that, you know, this isn't really the best time. So that's something to keep in mind as well, that, you know, we might experience some important truths or be able to express suddenly some important truths that we haven't yet been able to say, which could be really powerful and healing. At best, that is what will happen. But we also do want to watch for a tendency to assume that everything is true, just because we do have that sneaky kind of Mercury-Neptune influence that can make things a little bit more unpredictable. And then this lunar eclipse, as I said, is conjunct this south node, which actually adds a little bit of karmic intrigue. So there could be like paths illuminating. There's a little bit of a destiny vibe to this lunar eclipse where it might be pretty important on a larger scale. We'll see how that plays out for all of us respectively. And it is important to look at where this eclipse is happening in your unique chart. So if you have that handy, I want you to find where 10 degrees of Sagittarius is in your birth chart in the way of the houses. And whatever house falls at 10 degrees Sagittarius, or whatever house contains 10 degrees Sagittarius, is where this eclipse is happening in your unique birth chart, and that is the area of life that is likely to be experiencing shifts and clarification during this eclipse. So for me personally, it's in the second house of security and possession. So, you know, I will expect to experience shifts that involve the ways in which and the conditions by which I allow myself to feel secure. So that's going to be, I think, helpful just to know where this eclipse is happening for you. But we can always think about Sagittarian themes, which, you know, for a lunar eclipse in Sagittarius, I would expect that we experience shifts in the way of our belief systems and our philosophies and our ethics and moral code, because these are all ruled by Sagittarius. The systems, the mental systems that essentially direct our lives, the things that we believe to be right and wrong, the spiritual beliefs that we hold. These could get a little bit of an upgrade or a shift in the next week or so as this eclipse energy kind of unfolds. That would be my expectation. But yes, this eclipse is really important, and my advice is to just be intentional about your word. Obviously, if a truth is ready to come out, then say it, but just do be careful just about, you know, this not being the best time for like a big reveal or monologue, and also be aware that you may experience, you know, interesting revelations about where, as I said, you stand with other people in your life, and be open to more information coming in, but understand that this is a time to extract some truth. So that can actually be an asset to know that. And that's it. That's all I wanted to talk about. I feel like we went through everything. So that is May/June astrology. I hope that you have a fantastic beginning to this eclipse season. We do have the Gemini solar eclipse happening at the end of June, which will probably be a part two podcast episode. But I really just, there was so much going on that I really wanted to come on and do this episode. And I feel like it was actually very thorough. So hopefully you enjoyed it as well. Now, before I let you go, I always just like to invite you to subscribe to my weekly newsletter. It's totally free to be a part of it. And I just send out one email every Tuesday morning. And it's not like you get a bunch of emails. It's literally just the one email once a week. So you're not getting spammed or anything like that. And basically I just talk about the astrology of the week, which if you like astrology, which I assume that you do if you're here, then it's essentially this. It's essentially just that we talk about the astrology of the week. I give you my unique take on it. And then I pull a card for the collective, specifically for the community. I set the intention that the card will apply and be able to help everybody who reads the newsletter. So that includes you if you're subscribed. So I pull a card. We talk about that for a while. I publish my weekly gratitude list. And sometimes I'll just talk a little bit about anything going on in my life that I think that, you know, the collective could benefit from hearing or musing on with me. So the newsletter is a fun place to be. It's a really good way to stay in touch in between podcast episodes. So I will post the link in the description of this episode to subscribe if you would like to go. and do that. I do recommend it. I would love to see you there. And I actually would also say too that I've had a couple people say that they were having trouble accessing the link or finding the link. So if you have any trouble at all, if you can't find it or you don't know how to subscribe, it's pretty easy. But if you can't, then please just let me know, shoot me an email, and I will be able to subscribe you myself. I just need to make sure that you want to be there. Obviously, I need permission to send you an email. So please do just let me know, and I can actually subscribe you if you just give me the email that you want subscribed. And then the other thing I want to say is to send me your questions, because I love hearing from you all. I really like to have a dialogue. I love that this is an open community where we can share ideas and have back and forth conversations. I also really like to know what you guys want to hear about and what you want to talk about. I think part of what makes this podcast so special is that I really am trained in so many different areas, so I can speak on a wide number of different topics. I can talk about witchcraft and practical magic. I can talk about lifestyle and law of attraction. I can talk about astrology, tarot, crystal healing, Reiki, energy work, tapping. Really, we can traverse the worlds. So I'm very interested in hearing where you would like me to go more, or if you even have specific questions. I get the most beautiful emails from you guys. And even if it's not something I end up wanting to share on the podcast or feeling that it would benefit everybody, I will probably respond. I shouldn't say probably. I pretty much always respond. There hasn't really been an email yet that I've just read and didn't respond to. So I can not only respond, but I can probably either answer your question via email or send you to a teacher that I think could help you. So it's worth emailing me. My address is thesmartwitchpodcast@gmail.com. I would love to hear from you. We can also just chat. I would love to hear about how you feel about the podcast, how you liked this episode, how you're feeling with all this astrology going on. And yeah, you're always welcome to send me a message. It's a very free space to do that. So that's it. So thank you so much for listening. I hope that you enjoy the rest of your day. Have a fantastic eclipse season. And have a happy rest of your May, and let's start June strong, and I will talk to you again very soon.